Hello and welcome to the Special Needs Parenting SOS podcast. My name is Nadia Tari and I'm a mom of four with my youngest two kids having special needs. I wanted to create a podcast where other parents who have a child with special needs could come to get some tips, suggestions, and encouragement. On today's podcast episode, I'm going to be sharing about a very troubling, disturbing, shocking thing that happened to my daughter exactly 2 weeks ago tomorrow. It was, as I've mentioned before, I have two older children who live in downtown Portland, Gabriella and Elijah. Gabriella, my daughter Gabriella is 24 years old and my son Elijah is 22. And then my two younger kids who have special needs, Isaiah is 8 and Josiah is 5. However, almost exactly 2 weeks ago tomorrow, my daughter Gabriella got up from her downtown Portland apartment and went to work just like she does every other single day, and except for this day was very different. While she was at work, someone in her apartment complex deliberately set the place on fire, and in a matter of minutes, my daughter lost everything she had ever owned, including her two cats, which to her were like her children. I mean, she loved them more than anything, pretty much. So it was very devastating. I'm still in shock. She's in shock. To work so hard to, you know, imagine everything in your home, your bed, your sheets, your pillow, your pots and pans and plates and cups and all those sentimental photos, letters that people had written her, cards, birthday cards, Christmas cards. She held on to all that sentimental stuff. And I know not everyone holds on to sentimental cards and things like that, but my daughter did. And, you know, so do I. So does my son Elijah. Like, those things mean a lot to us. But having her realize that everything was gone in just a second, well, minutes, literally, the person who set the fire lived on the third floor directly underneath my daughter, who lived on the fourth floor. And it's not like they were kind of, you know, close, like at a diagonal. No, he was directly underneath her. So he actually took a broom one time and was hitting his ceiling with the broom, which in essence was hitting my daughter's floor. And it's not like she was playing music too loud or anything. It's just he was quite the character. I mean, he was really difficult. You could argue he is or was mentally ill, although I'm not so sure about that because he deliberately pulled the fire thing 15 times in 30 days leading up to the fire. So it was almost like he was preconditioning everyone in the apartment to get used to it and realize, oh, it's just Garrett. His name was Garrett, you know, no big deal. And then every time he would do that, every time he would pull the fire thing, fire extinguisher, whatever it's called, the fire department would come just to make sure it was, you know, not real. But they started coming, you know, a little bit slower and a little bit slower, because it's like, not only did everyone in the apartment complex realize that it wasn't real, that it was Garrett, oh, he did it again, but the fire department almost knew without a doubt that it's not real, but they just had to follow through anyway. And so who pulls the fire thingy 15 times in a 30-day span leading up to setting a real fire? I mean, that's why I find it hard to believe that he was mentally ill enough to not know what he was doing. He knew good and well what he was doing. So anyway, it's really, really disturbing to think that had my daughter not gone to work that day, had she called out sick, you know, if she'd been feeling sick, had she overslept, had she any number of things, if for any reason under the sun, had my daughter not gotten up and gone to work that day, she would have been one of the first to be killed in that fire. Because like I said, his apartment was directly underneath hers. And he jimmy-rigged a complete explosive using the gas stove. And I'm not even sure all the chemicals that he used. I mean, they know he set the fire. He's already been arrested. and charged with arson and like 30 other counts of something. But it's like they know he set the fire. They know he did it deliberately. He was getting evicted for non-payment. He was obviously thinking, if I don't have a home, no one here is going to have a home. You know what I mean? But anyhow, knowing that he set the fire deliberately and killed, I don't even know how many pets died in that fire. Because where my daughter lived, that downtown apartment unit, or not unit, but apartment complex, it was called the May Apartments. That's the name of it. And it was 113 years old. So it was a really awesome old historic apartment building. And there were many floors. Like there were four normal levels, like above ground level, four different floors, you know, and they had an elevator. It was a really old, cool elevator. But then there was a whole bunch of units in the basement level. So technically speaking, there were five levels. And I'm not sure how many units were on each level, but there were hundreds, and I mean hundreds of people who lived there. This was no duplex. This was no small little apartment complex. This was huge. It was massive. They had to shut down 405, which is a massive freeway in Portland, because the fire, the smoke was so bad. They were handing out masks. I mean, it was just, it was all over the news. It was absolutely horrendous. And so just trying to rebuild for my daughter. She's only 24 years old, and just thinking, you know, everything she has ever worked so hard to save. You know, she had saved money and cash, you know, in the apartment. That's all burned. Everything was burned. There wasn't one thing that was saved. It was just catastrophic. The whole building is gone. I mean, it's toast. Like, the ceiling caved. It's not, you know, like sometimes a house catches on fire, but they're able to, you know, keep the fire contained to one portion of the house or something, but not in this case. The whole apartment is completely gone. Everything that everyone owned in that apartment is completely gone. People, we already had a homeless problem in Portland, and now with the hundreds of people who have just recently become homeless because of this guy who set the fire, that's made the homeless problem even worse. These are legitimate people who paid rent, who, you know, were working and trying to keep a roof over their head. They did nothing wrong, but because of some guy who was angry that he was getting evicted, he deliberately chose to start a massive fire, an explosion, to cause this entire building to burn down. I mean, sorry, if you can't hear in my voice, I'm a little bit worked up about this. But I praise God that my daughter is alive. Because had she been at home, if she had been in her apartment, she would have been one of the first people to be killed. Now, I do not know if anyone was murdered or killed in this fire. I kind of find it hard to believe that the firemen got every single person out. But as of yet, and it's been almost 2 weeks, I haven't heard of one person that died. There were lots and lots of pets or animals that died because the firemen are obviously focusing on getting human beings out, not pets. But there were more than 80 firemen working fervently to get everyone out. They were banging on the doors, running down the hallway. This is not a drill. This is real. Get out. You know, get out. This is real. It was like, it was such a bummer because everyone who lived there was so preconditioned to another false fire alarm that you could just imagine that they hear the fire alarms and they think, ah, you know, it's Garrett. It's nothing. And so it made it even more challenging to get the message across to everyone in a very quick time frame for all those firefighters. This is real. This is real. Get out now. Oh, I mean, it was just horrific. I really don't know of a better word to describe it. So for any of you who are listening, please, I'm begging you, please pray for my daughter. She is not doing well at all. She is not coping well. It's really, really hard when you lose someone, or in this case, she lost both of her pets, to like function and to, you know, continue working. Fortunately, she still has a job, so that's good. She was at work when he started the fire, and you know, she could have forgotten her cell phone at her apartment. Not that she normally does that, but I'm just saying, she has her cell phone and all the photos and videos she had of her cats, or at least on her cell phone, and she has the cell phone. She also happened to have her passport on her, so she's got the clothes on her back and her purse, her cell phone, her passport. That was it. And everything else is gone. So, my daughter's, father, my ex-husband, we went out to dinner with his dad, which would have been Gabriella's grandpa, when she was just a little girl. And her grandpa, my ex-husband's dad, gave Gabriella this stuffed animal. We were at Olive Garden, and we'll never forget. It was the last meal we had together before he died. But anyway, he gave her this stuffed animal, and she cherished it. She held on to it for all these years. She's 24 years old, and she was given that stuffed animal by her grandpa when I think she was seven or 8 years old. And of course, that's gone in the fire. Now, obviously, I can go out and buy her another stuffed animal that looks like it. But you know what I mean? It's just not the same. All those photos, there were some photos she had at her apartment that we don't have copies of, you know? And so I say this to, number one, share with you, please, please pray for my daughter. Also pray for all those other people who lost everything in a few hours. I mean, it was just gone instantly. And they're now struggling, as well as my daughter, to find another place to live. You know, a place in downtown Portland is not cheap. A studio apartment, like only 400 and some square feet, the cheapest you can find right now, I know because I'm looking to try to find her another place, is $1,200. You know, and of course it goes on up from there, $1,400, $1,500, $2,000. I mean, depending on how much space you have and, you know, the view, things like that. But just to get a bare bone basic studio, 400 square feet, you cannot find one for less than $1,200. Now, you can rent a room from a stranger for maybe, you know, $800 or $900. But that's kind of iffy and scary. I mean, not everybody feels comfortable renting a room from a stranger on Craigslist or whatever. And so I want to ask for your prayers, not only for my daughter, but for everyone else who is now scrambling to try to find a place to live, you know, who lost their home to the fire. Pray for them to be able to rebuild, having to go on Craigslist or Facebook Marketplace or OfferUp, trying to get pots and pans and a bed and a bed frame, a dresser. You know, you think of all those things you have in your home, and just imagine if all of a sudden it was all gone, and you're in shock and you're grieving and you cannot believe it. And then all of a sudden you still have to function. You've got to go to work still, you know, you still have bills to pay. You've got a cell phone, and you know, now she's got to come up with first, last, and a deposit to move into another place. So many people have asked me, did she not have renter's insurance? No, she didn't have renter's insurance. And I feel so guilty because as her mother, I should have thought of that. I should have like said, hey, do you have renter's insurance? But I didn't. I didn't think of it, and neither did she. And there were hundreds of other people who also lived there at the May Apartments. And guess what? They didn't have renter's insurance either. So another thing to take from this podcast episode, whether you live in a home or you're renting an apartment, please, please, please make sure you have renter's insurance. You know, if you've bought in your home, I'm pretty sure you have to have homeowner's insurance. I know we do. You know, we had to get it when we bought our house. But if you're just renting somewhere, please don't think, you know, it'll never happen to me. I never thought in a million years that a fire would happen to anyone that I love. Most certainly never did I think it would happen to my daughter. So it can happen. It can happen whether it's just an old faulty wire. It can happen whether someone sets it deliberately. It could happen from, you know, Christmas tree lights. Like, I don't want to freak you out, but there's all kinds of reasons that a fire could happen. So don't think it couldn't happen to me. It won't happen to me. Please, if you do not have renter's insurance at your place, whether it's a home or you're renting a house, please, please get it. Get it today. It's really cheap. It's really not that much. Maybe $12 or $14 a month or something. I guess it depends on how much you own and blah, blah, blah. But it's worth it. It's worth it. Because now I had to start a GoFundMe for my daughter to try to rebuild to get, you know, enough money for the first and last and a security deposit so she can get moved into another place. Plus, it's going to take thousands of dollars even if we buy everything used. I'm talking, you know, mattress, bed frame, dresser, couch, chair, lamp. I mean, it would take me forever to go through and list everything that she had in her, you know, apartment that burned down. But fortunately, we have a lot of friends and family. Well, we do have a lot of friends and family, but we've had a lot of friends who have donated. They have donated money to her GoFundMe account, and they have donated actual physical items. Like they've been, you know, coming to me and saying, here, Nadia, give this to Gabriella. These are pots and pans. You can give this to her. And here's some knives and here's some, you know, queen sheets and things like that. And so Gabriella feels really, really blessed from the outpouring of love and support that she has received. Also, a lot of people have been calling her and texting her and sending her messages on social media. And so, if you would like to reach out to her, I know she would love to hear from you because right now, like I said, she's just really struggling. She's not coping very well. You can find her on Facebook. You know, her name is Gabriella Keelhorn, K-I-E-L-H-O-R-N on Instagram. She goes by Codeine. I'll just spell it out. C-O-D-E-I-N-E underscore T-U-R-S. So she also goes by the name Gutknife, G-U-T-K-N-I-F-E. So if you look in her bio and you see Gutknife, that is my daughter. And if you look at her face, she looks just like me. So anyway, I wanted to share a little clip of my daughter was interviewed by the news. There were several different news stations. I don't remember them all that, you know, they were trying to talk to, you know, obviously people who used to live there. My daughter just happened to be one of many that they interviewed. So I'm just going to play this really short clip. It's about, I think it's 2 minutes of, the news. This was Fox 12 news. The voice you're going to hear, is my daughter. They mention it's Gabby Keelhorn, because she goes by Gabby, not Gabriella. So you'll actually hear her voice as she was being interviewed by the news, and I'm going to play that now.
Lived at the apartments with arson. He made his first court appearance today. Fox 12's Adrian Thomas spoke with one person who lived at the apartments who tells us they believe this could have all been prevented.
Police say that man is 30-year-old Garrett Rep, and he's facing 31 charges, including arson, reckless endangering of another person, and criminal mischief. Court documents also reveal that in the months leading up to the fire, Rep had a troubling criminal history, plus a tenant who says she lived in the unit above Rep and lost everything in the fire says more could have been done to stop him. Garrett Rep appeared silent in a Multnomah County court and pled not guilty to all of his charges. According to court documents, Rep had several prior criminal mischief, disorderly conduct, and trespassing charges spanning from December 2022 until just days before the fire. Gabby Keelhorn says she lived in the apartment above Rep on the fourth floor and says this tragedy wasn't surprising.
This, we all saw coming. Yeah. Everybody saw this coming. People that didn't even know me saw this coming. This was predictable, preventable, and premeditated.
Court documents also reveal Rep was ordered to leave the May on May 8th due to an eviction, but the Multnomah County Sheriff's Office says he was only served a notice and deputies never came to physically remove him. Portland police arrested Rep on May 16th, the same day of the fire, for allegedly breaking through his walls and into a neighboring vacant apartment a week earlier on May 9th. We asked.
Lived at the apartments with.
So there you have it. That is from Fox 12 News, and the girl you heard speaking, that was my daughter, Gabriella Keelhorn. So anyway, she's furious. She's like, She's sad. She's grieving. She's angry. She's all of these emotions. And she's really having a hard time because, you know, it's like it would be hard enough if the fire was completely accidental and no one was to blame. She would still be grieving the loss of her two cats, and she would still have to deal with trying to find another place to live and, you know, getting another couch and chair and bed and all that stuff in her kitchen. Like, it still would be very, very challenging. But knowing it was deliberately set by the guy who lived directly underneath her, she just is like, oh my goodness, she wants justice so bad. She wants him to serve prison time to pay a price for what he did and not just, you know, like get off and be like, oh, well, you know. So anyway, I wanted to also mention when I said earlier that we have a lot of friends and family. And what I was starting to say was that a lot of friends and family have helped or contributed either through the GoFundMe or through, you know, donating actual items. And then I kind of stopped and, well, I hesitated, and I wanted to clarify why I hesitated. Yes, we do have a lot of friends and family, of which I'm very thankful for. But I also wanted to share that I was absolutely shocked and still am shocked to this day that I have family members, family, like blood. I'm not talking about a second, third cousin, half removed. No. I'm not going to say names because I don't want to like literally call my family members out. You know, this is public, but I'm going to say close family members, not my mom, not my sister. But I'm just going to end it there and just say very close family members who not only have they not reached out to Gabriella or I or my mom or any of us or my sister, they've not. I mean, I've posted on Facebook, I've posted on Instagram. I've got, you know, the link for the GoFundMe. There's been a lot of comments. I asked, would you mind sharing this post? I think 38 people shared, which I really appreciate because, you know, you share a Facebook post and then it just gets seen by so many people. But what I found really surprising was my daughter could have died. This is so serious. It's like horrific. And I have lots of family members, close family members, who haven't even so much as reached out and said, hey, how is Gabriella doing? Is she okay? Has she found a place to live? How is she coping? They haven't donated, you know, anything to the GoFundMe. And that's okay. They could just pray. They could just call or text or have made a comment on the Facebook or Instagram. It's like in some form or fashion, I have so many family that are aware of the situation, but haven't said anything, haven't reached out. And it's hurt me deeply because like this is family that I thought would always like be there to just, even if it's just moral support, like, hey, you know, do you want me to have prayer with you? Hey, just how are you doing? How is Gabriella doing? Is there anything I can do to help? Like, you know, you have family that you just think will always be there for you, especially when something devastating happens. And so I'm kind of having a hard time here. I've just got to be honest and say, I could use your prayers because it just hurts really bad just thinking that strangers have commented, strangers have donated to my daughter's GoFundMe to help her rebuild, you know, and find another place to live and stuff. Absolute strangers have donated. And my own blood family, close family, family that I have bought in plane tickets to go visit them with my two boys who have special needs, which if you're listening to this and you have a child who has special needs, you probably understand how difficult it is, especially if your child has a wheelchair. I mean, it's not exactly easy to travel when you have two children who have high-level special needs. And I have never once complained or said anything about the challenges or difficulty to, you know, fly to Indiana to visit my family back there, my family in Indiana. That's where a lot of my family live. Like, I've never complained about, you know, last year we did an RV road trip back there to go to some of my cousins, their children, you know, my cousin had a son who was graduating from high school. Well, we didn't have to go to his graduation, but we wanted to. We wanted to be there because we're family. Family's there for each other, right? Or so I thought. And so I'm just saying, like, you know, here we are spending $800, $1,000 on plane tickets so that we can fly back to Indiana. I have more cousins who have more children who are graduating in just a couple weeks. And months ago, I bought tickets for my two younger sons and I to fly back to Indiana to visit them. And my mom bought a ticket and my sister from Idaho bought a ticket. Like, we're all going back to Indiana to be there for my cousin's children to see them graduate. And I only bring this up right now to just to make a point. The point is that family is supposed to be there for each other through the good times, the bad times, the big events, the not so big events. I mean, we don't have to be at all of my cousins' kids' graduations. Of course not, you know, but we want to. We want to stay close. We want to stay connected. Or maybe I should say I want to keep a close relationship. I want to be there for those milestones. I want to see them. I want to stay close. And I'm struggling right now because I'm realizing, you know, when my daughter almost died in this fire and I texted them and they didn't even text me back. Like, not even, it's not that I just didn't hear from them, that they didn't call me or they didn't call Gabriella or they didn't text us. I literally reached out to them. I sent them individual texts. I didn't even do a mass text. One by one, I reached out to my cousins, to my family. I'm sorry, I don't want to cry. And when I didn't hear back, it's just really hard. I'm sorry, I'm trying to push back the tears. When my cousins and my family didn't even have the courtesy to respond to the fact that my daughter could have very easily died, it hurts. It hurts really bad. And I noticed that, you know, I would always send Christmas cards and they never sent Christmas cards back. And I just thought, well, they're busy. And, you know, we all get busy and not everybody sends Christmas cards. And I just kept wanting to think the best, you know, and not take things personally. And I wish I could not take this personally. But I am. I am, because it's just so evident that when I didn't hear back from them, I actually reached out again a second time and said, hey, I'm just curious, you know, .. Did you see the above text that I sent you? Talking about where Gabriella's apartment complex burned down and she lost everything, including her two cats. Did you see that text message? And one cousin replied and said, yes, comma, so sad, period. And that's it. That's all she had to say. Yes, comma, so sad, period. Not, how are you doing? How's Gabriella? I'll pray for you. Oh, I'm so sorry. That's horrible. Like, literally, like, no emotion. Yes, comma, so sad. I mean, my mouth dropped when I read that text. It was like, wow, okay, well, that hurts. And then another cousin texted me back and said, oh, I just thought that was from a bot or, you know, an automated text message from the GoFundMe. I didn't realize it was from you. And I'm like, dude, I literally texted you from my personal phone number to your personal phone number. GoFundMe doesn't send out automated, like, it doesn't work like that, right? We're given a link to her GoFundMe. You know, I created the GoFundMe account. It's organized by Nadia Tari. And then you get a link. And then you take that link and you share it on social media. You share it on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, wherever. Or you email it to people. You text it to people. I was like, GoFundMe is not going to have your contact information to send out. It's not like I have a mass email list where it's like, you know what I mean? It's just, when my cousin was saying that he just thought that, like, even though it was from my phone number, I texted him directly, he didn't think it was from me. He just thought it was a mass send out from GoFundMe, which, obviously, I'm the one who took the time to type all that. It was from me, not GoFundMe. And I clarified that. And instead of apologizing, he simply said, or instead of saying, I'm really sorry, you know, I'm really, really sorry, or I'm so sorry, he said, I apologize for the confusion, which meant he's not sorry, but he realizes that I feel hurt. You know what I mean? So anyhow, I don't want to spend any more time on this, but I would like, if you don't mind, would you please pray for my daughter? Would you please pray for all those other people who lost everything in that fire from the May apartments in downtown Portland? Would you please pray for me? Because I feel a lot of hurt from my family, because I realize now they don't care. And after all these years, I kind of wanted to think that they did care. It's more than evident at this point, that they don't care. And I'm just struggling to come to terms with that. I do feel really blessed that my daughter is alive and she didn't die. And I feel blessed for all those people who have already reached out to her, and to me, you know, just say, hey, cause it's really stressful when your daughter almost dies or could have almost died. Like, my kids are my whole world. My whole world are all four of my children. So this is getting to be a long podcast, and I didn't mean for it to be that long. So I'm going to wrap it up. But anyways, please, please, on a final note here, if you do not have renter's insurance, I am practically begging you, please go get renter's insurance, and make sure that you share to anyone that you love or care about, any of your friends or family, hey, if you're renting, do you have renter's insurance? And if they blow you off and just say, nah, it's fine, I'm sure I won't need it, go ahead. You can share my story of what happened to my daughter or not. You don't have to share her story, but I just want to encourage as many people as possible to make sure they have renter's insurance, and to make sure, don't think it will never happen to me. It could happen to you, and it just happened to my daughter 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago tomorrow. So if you would like to donate to her GoFundMe, you can go to GoFundMe and type in Gabriella Keelhorn, GABRIELLA, and her last name is Keelhorn, KIELHORN. I did not realize that her old boss at a restaurant she used to work at, her old boss heard of the fire, and she created a GoFundMe for Gabriella as well. And then the boss where she currently works at also started a GoFundMe. So you may find three different GoFundMes all associated with her name. But obviously, if you go to GoFundMe and you type in her name, you can see the one organized by Nadia Tari, because that's me. At the time I created the GoFundMe, I didn't realize that anyone else had started a GoFundMe for her. So I was shocked, and just so I felt warm and fuzzies that her current boss as well as her old boss went out of their way. She did not ask them. She did not ask me. My daughter has not asked for anything from anyone. So please don't read into this that she's, you know, asked me to do a GoFundMe. She didn't ask that at all. I created it just because I feel for her, and her current boss and her old boss, they also just did that out of the kindness of their hearts, because we all love my daughter. You know, Gabriella is such a character. And so anyway, if you do go to GoFundMe, if you would like to donate, there are three different GoFundMes. You could obviously donate to any one, but the one that I created, I'm specifically using those funds to help with the first, last, and deposit, which should be at least $3,000. just to get her into an apartment. But I also want to raise enough where I can take care of 6 months' rent, just because I want her to just have time to just process and realize, you know, just one less burden off her shoulders. I feel like she's really grieving right now, and she's really angry about what happened, and it's really hard to focus and, like, you know, pay bills and stuff. So I want to take as much pressure off her shoulders as I can. So I put the goal for the GoFundMe at 10,000, but obviously, however much we raise is however much we raise. Even if we can only get her 2 months of rent paid, I'm sure that will be a huge burden off of her, as opposed to having, you know, nothing at all. So on that note, I am going to wrap it up. If you are a parent of a child who has special needs, I would love to have you join my private Facebook group. It's a safe environment strictly for parents who have a child with special needs, where you can get the encouragement and support from other parents who can totally relate to what you're going through. The name of my private Facebook group is the same name of this podcast, which is called Special Needs Parenting SOS, and I look forward to connecting with you soon.